and welcome to the Deep Dive Radio Show. As always, I'm your host, Nick Espinoza, and we're going to be talking about all things cybersecurity, cyber warfare, and technology related, and I think we're one of the only ones out there that's doing that right now. If you'd like to be part of the radio show in any way, shape, or form, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. Or you can send us an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. We have an action-packed show as always. There's always a lot to cover, so stick around with us as we deep dive into a topic and we catch up on everything else. So without further ado, let's begin. And we have probably one of the most interesting and amazing and toughest deep dives that I have ever done in my life. And I'm not kidding about that. This was a lot of work. It was emotionally heartbreaking at times. And I want to kind of take you through that before we dive in. But our last interview, and I'll start there first, is with Ina Sovsun. And she is a member of Ukraine's parliament. She is actually in Kyiv, where the bombing is happening and the invasions and all of that. And I spent days back and forth messaging with her where she would drop off essentially just into nothing, where I thought maybe we had lost her, maybe she was killed. We didn't know what was going on, only to have her pop up to say I had to relocate. This was just quite the emotional odyssey to essentially get her to sit down. But we did on Monday morning, February 28th, Central Time, at which was about 2 p.m. or so, Kyiv time in Ukraine. And it is essentially a firsthand account of what she's experienced, what the Ukrainian people are thinking, how they're holding up. I think it was just, it just turned out well. But the first interview that we actually did, the first interview that you're going to hear, which actually was the second interview because I interviewed him after, essentially was a man named Dan Dyson. I saw him on CNN and I reached out immediately because he is a prominent Ukrainian American. He is the president of one of the chapters of the Ukrainian Congress. He'll talk about that. But I wanted to get a perspective from Ukrainians outside of Ukraine as they are watching their loved ones in a war zone, fight for their lives and everything that they are doing, and how are their communities holding up, and he had a lot to say. I actually put or you will hear a disclaimer in front of that interview, primarily because obviously he's got a lot of strong opinions on Russia and everything else. But these are just two absolutely fantastic, fantastic interviews. You don't want to miss those. And we had reached out to multiple people. Or I should say I actually was the one doing all of this work. I had reached out to a few, a deputy defense minister in Ukraine, the defense minister, the U.S. ambassador to Ukraine, various members of parliament, just getting some various and spotty responses, some declining, some not even responding, which is very possible they're not alive right now. We have no idea. But I wanted to share with you before we go on, one of these that I got a response to on February 26th. So a few days ago, it was over that weekend when just fighting is just raging on. And I have no idea when you're listening to this. It could be later in the week and we might have a Russian flag flying over Kyiv, or maybe, they're still digging in, or, maybe the Ukrainians have won at this point. Who knows? But on February 26th, there was relentless bombings, of Ukrainian positions. Russia was essentially sieging or putting Kyiv under siege, as well as Kharkiv, which is the second largest city, and various others. They were taking bases. It was just a complete mess. And I heard back from another member of parliament named Andriy Osachuk, and he said this, and this was his reply. I'm going to basically say this verbatim, even though I will correct some of his English here. And I basically said, hey, please stay safe, but if you're up for an interview, let me know. And this is what he said, and I quote Mr. Osachuk, member of parliament of Ukraine. Hi. At the moment, I'm in the middle of nowhere trying to evacuate my three daughters from Kyiv bombing. Everything like in a good Hollywood drama, but all is real. I hope in 1-2 days I will reach some safe destination in the west of Ukraine for them. After that, we may talk. And I have not heard from him since. And it has been 2 days plus at this point. And we obviously fear the worst. We hope for the best. But this is the situation that we are seeing these people in. You know, there's a lot that is going on here. We are leveling sanctions, obviously, against Russia. We've seen the Russian stock market go down by 50%. The ruble is less than 1 cent US right now. So there is a lot of damage that is being done to Russia in retaliation, not to mention the fact that now the Germans and the Americans are funneling weapons, you know, and other things to Ukraine to basically bolster their resistance as I'm talking right now. And they're going through peace talks. So this is just a complete and utter mess, as war is, because war is always messy. But it's so important to bring these voices and bring these messages, you know, to the world. And so with that, I want you to really listen to these. I want you to pay attention to these. I don't normally ask my audience to share or spread the word, but I'm actually going to do something I normally don't do, is that once this has been out, you know, for a few days and it's been picked up by the various radio stations, I'm going to put it out on my SoundCloud channel as well. And you can watch these interviews on my YouTube channel. And so with that, let's get started with Mr. Diazin. Like I said, you'll hear that disclaimer, but please stick around because you do not want to miss Ina's interview live from Kyiv at that moment.
You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM.
And before we go on to the first interview that I mentioned here, I want to say that the views expressed by my guest are his views only and those possibly of the organization that he represents. They by no means represent myself, the Deep Dive Radio Show, Pacifica, or the radio station that you're listening to. And the reason why I say this is, obviously, war is a messy thing. There are both sides to a war. He is obviously on one of those sides. Therefore, just because of who he is, I want to make that statement. I want to make that clear. It is an interesting conversation that we had, but I think it's important to understand that bit. So with that, let's get to the interview.
Hey, everybody. Nick Espinoza, your chief security fanatic here. And today I have a very special guest. I am talking to Dan Diazin. He is president of the Ukrainian Congress Committee of America, the Illinois Division. And obviously, he has deep ties to the country of Ukraine, the citizens, and I'm sure ancestry there as well, for obvious reasons. And Dan, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you, Nick. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you. Thank you. Now, first things first, have you been in touch with your relatives in Ukraine? Or are they okay? Do you know what's going on?
I have. My relatives live in Western Ukraine. Okay. I have relatives that live just outside of the city of Lviv, and I have relatives that live just on the outskirts of Ternopil. Both cities located in Western Ukraine, of course, where fighting hasn't broken out at this point, not yet. And hopefully with the supposed peace talks, whether they will net anything is highly doubtful, but hopefully it'll not reach their, you know, world pressure and everything else being what it is. Hopefully we'll see some sort of resolution. But I had been in contact with them. I called them on Thursday evening, their time. They were in good spirits. Everything was okay. They are still in shock, an absolute shock, that the country was attacked. Their president, of course, President Zelensky, assured them, you know, no need to panic, no need to be worried. We don't believe that an attack is going to be imminent. Well, you know, unfortunately, that wasn't the case. You know, Putin unleashed his forces. Of course, attacking from the south, you know, part of the north and the east. And, you know, it looks like Belarus is going to join, you know, the attack, which is, again, they're going to be, you know, they're, Belarus today you know, they're tied to Russia. They are a proxy. They are not no longer an independent country. They've Lukashenko has given away control of his country to Putin, and he's going to be calling the shots. So, you know, we have information that rocket attacks were launched from Belarus, and it appears that he may even send in his army. So, but you know, my family right now is good. I do have a cousin who lives in Donbass, who moved there as a young lady. She was married there, and her husband is from that region. Unfortunately, we have lost touch with her since 2014, when the so-called separatists, who were, again, you know, Russian mercenaries, Russian proxies, basically, you know, tried to do a breakaway republic. We have lost touch with her since then. But my other family is right now fine. They're watching, unfortunately, this human tragedy unfold. They are on the path where, you know, right now, 500,000 refugees are fleeing and moving, you know, trying to get to countries like Poland, you know, Poland, Romania, right. Hungary, Czech Republic, that are thankfully allowing them safe passage and refuge in those countries.
Yeah, and it's been interesting to see to the point of Belarus, and I actually have some questions for you on that talk, very shortly here. But it's been interesting to see just who is and is not siding with Russia in this moment. You know, obviously we've seen Belarus and Lukashenko, as you mentioned, Chechnya is another one. But interestingly enough, some that were expected to either sit it out or not say anything, like the Czech Republic, Hungary, and Kazakhstan, have actually come out against this. So I think it's just, it's going to be a very, very interesting situation. But I wanted to actually talk to you basically to get the Ukrainian American perspective on the situation. Because I, you know, as I mentioned, I just spoke, I actually, before we started recording, I actually spoken to a member of parliament of Ukraine, before I spoke to you here. But I wanted to get your perspective. And you're from Chicago, obviously. So, we have a large Ukrainian population here in Chicago. Yes. And by virtue of that, I'd like to know what Ukrainian Americans are doing to try and help those and their family, in Ukraine. Is there an apparatus set up for them to, in some way, shape, or form, send money or help in any way?
Oh, yes, absolutely. We have a number of different avenues. The National Bank of Ukraine had actually set up an account where people can send money directly, for, of course, buying military supplies, humanitarian aid. Unfortunately, some of the websites or some of the transfers have been hacked by Russian hackers, and the money is not getting there. We in Chicago, we've set up an account at the Self-Reliance Credit Union, where we have an account set up for relief of Ukraine. People can send their donations there. Mm-hmm. We have agencies that we are working with that are thought of very highly in Ukraine. Our national board is tied in with a French, it's basically Doctors Without Borders. They're based in Ukraine. They've got warehouses through Ukraine. They do supplies for, of course, humanitarian causes. They supply medical kits to the army. They've been operating in Ukraine for many, many years. We trust them. So, you know, we're looking to do that. Yesterday at our rally, Congressman Quigley had said that he was going back to DC, and they're going to be introducing a TPS request, temporary protective status request, for Ukrainians to come into the country. Unfortunately, a lot of times those people get taken advantage of. So we are going to look to see what happens with that. We have a relief committee that we have at our headquarters in New York. That relief committee has been operational since the 40s, actually. And they have, we're going to be coordinating with them when refugees will be coming in, where they will be. We have a tremendous amount of people that are opening up their hearts and are willing to open up their homes to refugees if they can make it over here. Yeah. Again, you know, we are grateful to the nations of Poland, Hungary, Romania. Romania, we saw pictures on CNN where people were lined up at the border crossing, taking complete strangers because they knew the scope of the human tragedy. So, it's a full frontal support for refugees. We are collecting funds. Funds will be appropriated to the appropriate organizations that help support. The unfortunate thing is, in times like this, there's always what I term the charlatans, carpetbaggers, thieves right. that set up these fake websites, donate to this cause, we're right. helping, and it basically the money goes sideways. We saw this in 2004. We saw this more prevalently in 2014, where there was, you know, people absolutely, you know, they donated 0.5% of what they collected, and the rest was basically misappropriated. So right. Right. we are cautioning our supporters, Ukrainian Americans, everybody who wants to donate to the cause, because we have tremendous support within the Polish community, all the Baltic community, the Azerbaijani community, not to fall into the trap of donating to someone out of the blue who's claiming that they are helping the country. Go use the legitimate sources.
Right.
The Ukrainian Congress Committee of America has been around, you know, since 1949. We are trusted. We are recognized. Please send your donations, you know, through the sources that are respectable and are known.
Right. And one of those things, just on my radio show, for those that are listening here on the air, not obviously those that are watching this on YouTube, on my radio show, I'm going to be talking about that, because my show obviously is focused on cybersecurity. And so all those phishing attacks, those scams, as soon as there's any kind of humanitarian crisis, we saw it when everything went south in Syria as well. And we had millions of displaced Syrians. You know, it is a mess, and people will take advantage of that. So I think that is a very, very, you know, incredible point that you make. It's a very important one as well. And actually, one of the things that you just mentioned too, and I think is also one of the interesting things about this situation, especially as it relates here in the United States, is that we have an incredibly diverse population that is willing to support, you know, obviously the Ukrainians and obviously, you know, not just from countries in the area. But I'm wondering as well, because we have many Russian Americans here as well. And has your organization been in contact with any Russian American organizations or Russian organizations? Do you have a sense of what they're thinking, what they're feeling here? We've seen a lot of protests in Russia, you know, against Putin's government, and thousands literally have been arrested and detained in Russia. But what are you seeing here in terms of the Russian American community reaching out to the Ukrainian community or vice versa?
Well, truth be told, there is a Russian radio program. One of the commentators there is a Putin apologist, has been saying such heinous remarks about Ukraine, and you know, basically, you know, he's welcoming the attack, saying that Ukraine isn't a country, et cetera, et cetera. It's all the Putin talking points. You know, we've got freedom of expression in the United States. Mm-hmm. We're monitoring that to see if there is, you know, any kind of hate speech, if there's attacks. The Russian community, although, you know, it's sizable, I'm not aware of organizations. We have had, you know, certain talks with them. I'll give you an example. On Thursday night, I was at the Ukrainian Cultural Center on Chicago Avenue, and it was snowing. We were putting up flags of support, and a group of young Russian people, you know, emigres, they came. They had signs, you know, Russia support Ukraine, no war, etc. So, you know, that's really heartening to see that it isn't all, you know, Putin apologists and supporting the war. I think the ones that are here that have been educated here are fully aware of what Putin is, of what the situation is, the humanitarian crisis that's evolving, and are in support of us. I mean, we've seen it in Russia. We've seen it in countries, you know, in Berlin yesterday, it was 100,000 people in the streets supporting Ukraine. We've seen in virtually every single country where there are Ukrainians, and even, you know, countries as far flung as Japan have lent support. Yesterday in Toronto, I have a younger son that lives there. They had the neighborhood of 30,000 people at their city hall, protesting the Russian invasion. And again, you know, I'll reiterate, it's not an incursion. It's an invasion.
Yeah. Right. And I think outside of Russia and its allies, most countries and people universally accept that this is indeed an invasion. So with that, I wanted to pivot real quick. Something that you mentioned, that as you're collecting these funds, you've seen cyber attacks and hijacking of some of these funds. And obviously we've seen, especially in the buildup, I actually talked to Inna, the member of parliament, about this. There was a buildup of cyber attacks against Ukraine itself before the invasion. And that's one of those things that's becoming part of modern warfare right now. But here in the United States, are you getting reports that Ukrainians, outside of what you just mentioned with your relief organization, are you getting reports that Ukrainian or Ukrainian businesses outside of Ukraine have also been targeted, by presumably, Russian infrastructure and intelligence?
I have been, my computer was hacked yesterday. I had to do a quick turnaround. I had a service that came in, cleaned it up. I had 532 attempts to get into my system. Of course, I am somewhat of a public figure. I've spoken out at different rallies. So they have been hacked. The group, it's called, in Ukrainian, it's called Razum, which translates to together. They're activists. They have had their accounts hacked. We're not aware of any businesses here, but my son works for a bank in Canada. He said that they have tried to hack their system. One of the other Ukrainian-based credit unions had their system go down. They were down for about 12 hours. They managed to get their system back. So yes, attacks are happening. Computers are being hacked across all networks, not just in Ukraine, not just in the Ministry of Defense, foreign, banks, etc. This is happening everywhere. The tech guys that I was on the phone with yesterday said they could tell where it was all generated from. He says all of the attacks on your computer are being generated from Russia. So, their hackers are active. They are making every attempt to crash computers, get into systems, and conversely, we have Ukrainian hackers that are doing the same thing to them. They're flooding their websites with all sorts of other things they're doing everything that they can, as countermeasures, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's something that we've seen. So like the hacking collective Anonymous said, we're going to basically be going after Russia and all of that. And Russian state TV was actually hacked to start playing the Ukrainian national anthem, across right. Russia, which was amusing. And I actually talked to Inna about that, and she had mentioned that, well, that's great. And, that's a happy thing to see. Basically, if anybody is listening, essentially, please hack and put the body count right now of Russia. Let Russia's citizens see, that we have 5,000 plus killed, or that the Ukrainians, have killed 5,000 plus Russians, in this conflict, which is a very heavy casualty number for them, not to mention just all of the other statistics and all of that. Humanize the war as best you can against, the government. And so, and I think that's just something that's rather important. And I'm also curious to know, do you have contact with other Ukrainians outside of both America and Ukraine, just either organizationally or individually here? Like, are various Ukrainian organizations coordinating efforts globally in some way, or is it just everybody's just focused on Ukraine right now?
Well, we have the Ukraine Congress Committee of America. We are one of the founding members of the World Congress of Ukrainians. The World Congress of Ukrainians is the coordinating body for all organizations across the globe. So we have member organizations in, of course, United States, Canada, Britain, Germany, Spain, virtually every European country. In addition, we have... we have members that are in countries like Dubai, where actually a fairly large contingent of Ukrainians work in the oil sector. So we've got them in Dubai, and we had Ukrainians that came to our last Congress from Hong Kong. So they're, you know, we have citizens virtually in every country. The World Congress of Ukrainians is coordinating a lot of these actions, a lot of the humanitarian aid. They are helping the Ukrainian government with taking Russia to the European Court of Human Rights for human rights violations. A lot of us have seen, and I'm sure a lot of your viewers have seen, something that was absolutely horrific. A tank swerved in the roadway and crushed a car and then backed right over it. And thankfully, by God's grace, the person was alive. Yeah. He was extricated out of that.
I couldn't believe it.
But think of what they're doing. I mean, they're shelling. They said, we're only going to be targeting military installations. That's a blatant lie. They have targeted orphanages, kindergartens. The other day, they targeted a children's cancer hospital, of all things. I mean, this is just beyond the pale of accepted human behavior. I understand, if you're going to target, military, then target military. But their objective is not to target military. Their objective is to demoralize Ukraine, demoralize the population so that they sue for peace and capitulate. And they run into some just incredible resistance. The Ukrainian army has performed incredibly, and they have extracted a very high price. Russian media did not admit to any casualties until this morning. They said, we have had none killed, which is an absolute blatant lie. They've had soldiers deserting. They've had soldiers surrendering. They've had, in excess of, my last count was in excess of 4,500 that were actually killed.
So into this morning, around 6 a.m. Chicago time, 2 p.m. Kyiv time, mentioned that their estimates are over 5,000 now.
And stay tuned to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show as we take a quick break for a public service announcement. We'll be back right after that.